Welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we'll be discussing and reviewing The God of the Woods by Liz Moore. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
I currently am drinking a Crystal Light concoction. Just like, you know, one of those
concoction.
Yeah, like, well, I guess not really a concoction. It's just the Crystal Light powder and a bottle of water.
Real experiment you did over there, Heather.
Yeah. No, it's the kiwi strawberry.
Okay.
But they are, it actually is caffeinated.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those caffeinated ones. And then this morning I got a cold brew from Dunkin'.
Delicious.
Which was actually not as good as usual. It wasn't. Mm. It's okay. Usually I take a while to drink it because I get the large, and in midday it still tastes like pretty good, and like midday today it didn't have the same that it normally does. So yeah, but that's fine. It's a gloomy Monday, so I shouldn't be surprised. Work was chaotic. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. The end.
Totally valid. I agree. We did actually go to Starbucks this morning, Eric and I. I got brown sugar oat milk espresso. But Eric got this TikTok concoction. This is a real concoction.
A real
has
concoction.
A lot of ingredients.
Not a fake one. Fake news.
It's a matcha latte with oat milk, vanilla cold foam, and white chocolate mocha sauce.
Mmm.
I mean, I don't really like matcha, so I don't like the aftertaste.
I haven't tried matcha yet.
But without the aftertaste, it tastes like a milkshake. Like, it tastes very good. I don't know. He's seen it all over the TikTok, so you know how it is.
I know. I always find, like, drinks to try, and then I'm like, I'm going to order it, and then I just order my usual.
Oh, I know.
Because I'm too afraid to, like.
I have, like, 30 of them screenshotted, and same. I just don't. Could never be me.
Yeah.
Okay. Same. Well. Maybe next time we get coffee together, we'll both get a brand new coffee.
That's a good idea.
That's from our list.
I like that idea.
We'll say that it's research for the podcast.
I was just going to say, should we start like a series on the TikTok of like trying all the different coffee recipes?
Yes.
You know, because you might now live 15
we have
minutes.
The books. Not
and you're going to live 15 minutes away from me, hypothetically.
The so closest we've ever lived. Oh my God. You're never going to be able to stop us.
I know. This is the kind of friendship we have, and I'm going to blast myself on the podcast. I was already thinking, I was like, all right, so we can invite Kelsey over for Sunday dinners, like every other week.
I'm going to need it.
I know. I was like, yeah, no, we're going to do like Sunday dinners and like, you know, invite Kelsey over. It's going to be great.
I love that. Oh my God. And we'll just be like, hey, what are you doing? You want to go grab a coffee?
Sure. Literally. Exactly. I'll bring the baby. She's chill.
Yeah. She'll chill.
Give
She's
her some
good.
Coloring books. Great.
Yeah, I'm very excited. But we're just chilling. We're just going with the flow. We're seeing what happens, you know?
Exactly.
All right. So cheers.
Cheers.
All right. So The God of the Woods. Believe it or not, this was not Liz Moore's debut novel.
It wasn't.
Her debut was in 2007, which is a while ago.
Wow, that is a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
So after the publication of her first novel, she obtained her MFA in fiction from Hunter College. In 2009, she was awarded the University of Pennsylvania's Art Edge residency and moved to Philly. Now she still lives in Philly, and she's director of the MFA program of creative writing at Temple University.
Oh, okay.
So she is a writer through and through.
That's awesome.
So The God of the Woods was published in July 2024, instant New York Times bestseller for over 29 weeks. It was a number one bestseller among independent bookstores in the U.S., selected by Barack Obama for his summer reading list.
Oh.
The Barnes & Noble National Book Club choice for July and the summer choice for Jimmy Fallon's book club. Did you know Jimmy Fallon had a book club?
No, this is brand new information.
Like, I feel like I need to look into this. It was nominated for like 15 awards.
I know.
Which is crazy. But here are the ones it won. Goodreads Choice for Mystery Thriller of 2024. Book of the Month, Book of the Year, mm-hmm. which is very big.
It is.
She reads Best Of Award for Mystery, Thriller, and Suspense. Yeah. But it was also nominated for other Barnes & Noble, like for Libby Award, for LA Times, like so many things. So big success. And I did not know what I was getting into with this book, I feel like.
I didn't either, because I feel like it had this huge following and people were really obsessed with it. And like, I knew it was kind of like a thriller. And like, when you read the page, you know, the inscription of the book and what it's about, it sounds good. Like it was good, but I agree. I wasn't anticipating what I got.
Yeah. All right. So let me read the summary and we'll get into it. So this is right from the cover of my Book of the Month copy. When a teenager vanishes from her Adirondack summer camp, two worlds collide. Early morning, August 1975, a camp counselor discovers an empty bunk. Its occupant, Barbara Van Laar, has gone missing. Barbara isn't just any 13-year-old. She's the daughter of the family that owns the summer camp and employs most of the region's residents. And this isn't the first time a Van Laar child has disappeared. Barbara's older brother similarly vanished 14 years ago, never to be found. As a panicked search begins, a thrilling drama unfolds, chasing down the layered mysteries of the Van Laar family and the blue-collar community living and working in its shadow. Moore's multi-threaded story invites readers into a rich and gripping dynasty of secrets. Liz Moore's most ambitious and wide-reaching novel yet, The God of the Woods is a story of inheritance and second chances, the tensions between a family and a community, and a history that will not let any of them go.
Ambitious is the right word.
And wide-reaching.
Yeah. Because I feel like this was very ambitious, to be honest.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And, well, we'll get to it. But impressive how it all kind of tied together.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, because I was real nervous when I started the show.
I was too. And I actually, to make sure I finished it in time, I like did like, I read and did audio simultaneously. Okay. So I would read what I could at home, and then I would pick up where I was audio, and then I would come, which was actually helpful because I didn't know how to pronounce some of the things.
I was like, going to say, though, was it tricky because there were so many POVs?
Not really. I was pretty able. Like, I didn't know how to pronounce Judita's name, so now I know that it's Judita.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, don't know what that is.
Yeah, I just have her in here as Judy so that I don't fuck it up. So.
Yeah, well, it's Judita. That's how you pronounce it, Judita. Just so you know. Yeah, and like all like these weird town names. I was like, you know. Shanaki or whatever the heck it's called, and Shattuck Island. I was like, this is just crazy. So it actually was kind of nice listening to it partially as well.
I do and like that.
Yeah. So then I was just, I went back and forth, and then I finished it in time. Because I was like, if I just read it, I know I'm not going to get through it.
Oh, it's a long one. It's almost 500 pages.
Yeah. And like, I've been tired at night, which is when I normally read. And I was like, I know I wasn't going to. It wasn't gonna. Yeah. It would be very hard pressed.
It's not a quick read. I wouldn't say it's not an easy read, but there's just a lot to follow.
No, and the audio was actually pretty good. I would have done the whole audio if I had time.
Okay.
So the audio wasn't bad.
All right. I like that. All right. So our current timeline is 1975. So I listened to the Barnes & Noble podcast. Did you know Barnes & Noble had a podcast?
No. Why?
I'm learning so many things today.
I'm learning so many things. This is brand new information through and through.
So they interviewed Liz Moore when this book was the their book club choice.
Okay.
And asked her like, why 1975? The one I listened to was no spoilers. It was just like right when it first came out, so a lot of people hadn't read it yet.
Okay.
But then apparently they had a follow-up episode with spoilers. I didn't get to that. Anyway, so she said 1975 for a couple reasons. A big one is because there was no cell phones, no technology, and there were newspapers. And it's one of the characters, Sluder, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Jacob Sluder.
Sluder is based on an actual serial killer who was active in 1975.
Oh.
Named Robert Garrow.
Okay.
Which I didn't recognize the name like off jump, but I'm sure that I've listened to a podcast about him, because how many true crime podcasts have we listened to? But yeah, so interesting.
That is interesting.
So we start out with Barbara missing. Louise is her counselor and Annabelle is the counselor in training, and they both realize that this is bad news since they were supposed to be in charge, and apparently neither of them was at the cabin because they were both out partying or banging.
Could go either way.
Could go either way. We also meet Tracy, who was Barbara's bunkmate and her closest friend at camp, and everyone is losing their minds not only because Barbara is missing, but because her brother went missing 14 years ago, as we learned in the blurb. So that was when he was 8, and it was before Barbara was even born.
Yeah.
And Barbara is a Van Laar, which are the family who own the campground and their large estate next to the camp. So we have multiple timelines and multiple POVs, and it's all very confusing.
Yeah. Actually, when I was reading this, I was like, this actually is like a tough book to write like an outline for an episode, because it doesn't follow the timeline to a T. It jumps back and forth, but then it jumps back and forth with the multiple POVs, and the chapters are only like a couple pages.
Most of them are very short. So on each page, there's a list of the different timelines, and then the one that they're in is bold. So it gives you, so you know where you are, but it's 1950s, 1961, winter 1973, June 1975, July 1975, August 1975. And then when we get to August, then it breaks down into day one, day two, day six. So August 1975 is when Barbara goes missing. And that's when it breaks down into days, because they're doing the investigation. So let's start with Bear's story. His parents, Alice and Peter Van Laar, basically had an arranged or suggested marriage.
Yeah.
Alice was very young and naive. And according to Peter, and by her own account, she's uneducated, not very intelligent, and not very outgoing. Peter comes from a long line of wealthy Peters who are in the banking business and are very concerned with public opinion, of course. So in order to fit into Peter's world, she begins drinking daily just to get through the day. And this is the beginning of her substance abuse issues, which continue to current time. So Alice gets pregnant pretty quickly to produce a male heir for Peter and also to give her something to do.
Yeah.
And immediately being a mother transforms her. She finally feels like she has a purpose. And her son, Peter the 20th or whatever, he is nicknamed Bear. While Alice is obsessed with little Bear, Peter loves him also, but mostly because of what Bear means to their family.
Yeah, it's not really like an actual bonding. It's more like you're the next heir in this line.
And also because Bear is a great kid, like he's likable, he's friendly, he's self-aware. So if he wasn't such a great kid, Peter wouldn't have liked him as much.
Agreed.
So Peter's constantly trying to keep Alice from babying Bear or even getting too close to him, mainly because he's a control freak, I think. And he also doesn't think Alice is capable of anything. Like, why did they need a day nurse and a night nurse when she doesn't work?
I don't know. And it was so heartbreaking in the story when they do like this scenario where Bear calls for Alice in the middle of the night, and Peter's like, the night nurse will take care of it. And Alice is like, I need to like go see my child. And I'm just like, and he's like preventing her.
He's like, absolutely not.
And I'm like, couldn't be me. I was like, if my child is like reading that and knowing how I would feel if like my child was calling for me, I would do anything in my power to get to him. And so it's like insane that he was like, no, you're not allowed. Like, he's like dictating what she can and can't do as a mother.
Oh, I hate him. Yeah. And she's like, he's basically making it sound like they need to train Bear to be with this night nurse. I don't know. It was very weird. So, okay, Bear is also extremely close with TJ, or Tessie Joe, who is a little older than him. And basically, Bear follows her everywhere. TJ is the daughter of the camp director, Vic, who has been close to the Van Laar since he was young, but is obviously not a part of their social circle or their class in society. So every year, the Van Laars have a giant party at their estate, the Shoe Fly Goodbye, which is literally in honor of the flies going away. Incredible.
But also, I would totally do this. I would 100%. I would totally host a week-long event at my massive estate if I had one.
Rich people will make anything into a tradition where they can flaunt their money. And I don't blame them.
No, I don't either.
Because I'd be doing the same thing.
I would literally do the same thing.
So it's during this year when Bear's 8 years old that he goes missing. Local firefighters are called first. Then it jumps up the chain. But as with most rich people in books, the investigation is fucked from the beginning.
Yeah.
They waited several hours before calling authorities. The family's clamming up and calling the shots, and Vic is the one leading the searches. Carl, one of the firefighters who responded to the missing persons call, is also one of the grounds crew on the Van Lars property. And through a bunch of ridiculous events, he gets arrested for Bear's murder.
Mm-hmm. Without, like, any solid...
It's evidence, all circumstantial evidence. Mm-hmm. He was the last one to see Bear simply because he was leaving for the day and Bear was tying his shoes on the front lawn.
Yeah.
And then they found a little wood carving that he had taught Bear how to carve. But, like, no one even knows how long it was there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so like I said, it's all circumstantial, but this is a family with money wanting to blame someone, and that someone is Carl.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, before Carl can stand trial, he dies of a heart attack in police custody. But it's widely accepted that he was guilty and the police closed the case. So this big case solidifies the cop in charge's career trajectory. And we'll see him again many promotions later when Barbara goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were reading, what did you think happened to Bear?
I thought it was something like with the family. I just couldn't. I couldn't determine what.
Yeah. I agree.
Like, I knew it was something shady had happened, and, like, it seemed kind of like a cover-up, but I just couldn't determine in what way.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of red herrings, a lot of different...
A lot of red herrings.
Yeah.
That all pointed back to, like, someone from that property, be it the Van Lars or the Hewitts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have been any of them.
Mm-hmm. So, after losing Bear, Alice is inconsolable. But they have to have another child because society said so, I guess. And so they have Barbara. Not only is Barbara a difficult child, Alice isn't able to connect to her the way she did with Bear, which is totally understandable. I can't imagine the fear she would have of getting close mm-hmm. to her child and losing them again.
And it just kind of feels like Barbara's a replacement child. It's not like it wasn't something that Alice truly wanted.
Mm-hmm. Because she... could never replace Bear. Mm-hmm. And also Bear was this perfect little angel. And then Barbara's a little demon child, which, you know, sometimes they are.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter also doesn't like Barbara. And when it's clear she's going to be a headache for them, he ships her off to boarding school.
That's what you do when you're rich as well.
Exactly.
And you don't want to deal with your children.
But then when they said that they sent her with like two outfits and no winter jacket. Crazy. Would, like, never send her any – they had all this money. They mm-hmm. wouldn't even send her, like, care packages or check on her – whatever. They were very neglectful. So by the time she's a teenager, Barbara is dyeing her hair black, wearing lots of eyeliner, and dressing like a typical emo goth girly, which is her family's worst nightmare.
Exactly.
And she decides she wants to go to camp. And Alice readily agrees, since it means she won't have to deal with her daughter for the whole summer.
Mm-hmm. Because God forbid.
So she can drink and take her pills in peace.
Mm-hmm.
When Barbara starts camp, she's like a celebrity in a way. Everyone is curious about her. They're gossiping about her, trying to get a read on her. And no one really knows what to expect because they've heard all these things about the Van Lar girl whose brother mm-hmm. went missing and blah, blah, blah. But they don't know anything about her. So Barbara befriends Tracy, her bunkmate, and they quickly become close. And Barbara really helps Tracy out of her shell.
Yeah.
Because Tracy is super shy. She is not connecting with any of the other girls. She has trouble making friends even at home. Her parents have recently gone through a divorce. And Barbara just kind of sticks with her until Tracy warms up. And starts, you know, opening up to her.
I really liked their friendship in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much like kind of like a she's all that situation where she's mm-hmm. like trying to like make her just come out of her shell and like stop being like a little nerdy girl and just
be more outgoing.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara needed someone who wasn't judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy wasn't, because she was so naive and kind of inexperienced isn't what I mean. I just mean, like, I guess sheltered.
Sheltered, but also inexperienced, I feel like, is also valid, because she didn't really have any friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know how to talk to people. Like, she says, like, all the times, like, you know, she thinks about what to say and then just kind of doesn't say anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just kind of gets in her head. So I think inexperience is still a valid description.
Yeah, so they balanced each other out.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara is a natural at camp life. But she has a secret that she makes Tracy keep for her. Every night, she sneaks out of camp to visit a mysterious boyfriend, but is back every morning before anyone notices that she was missing. Until one night when Barbara doesn't come back, and that's where we were at the beginning of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're still getting flashbacks, obviously, from Alice and about Bear's disappearance, but we also add in Louise and Inspector Judy, the nation's first lady investigator. So Louise has a pretty fucked up home life.
Yeah.
Her mom is an alcoholic and they are very poor. She kind of had this trajectory when she graduated high school. Like, she was super smart and she was going to be this success story. She was going to get out of their small town and make something of herself and all this stuff. But she went to college and dropped out after a year because it was hard and expensive, which is relatable.
Yeah, exactly.
So now her whole goal in life is just to make sure that she sets her younger brother up for a better life. And he's only 12. So while in college, she met John Paul, who was a family friend of the Van Lars and somehow the dude in line to take over the bank since Bear is no longer the heir.
Yeah. Because God forbid they give the business to a woman as well.
Oh, please. Well, especially not Barbara. She's wearing eyeliner, Heather. So John Paul gets Louise a job at the camp through his connections because he is the Van Lars godson. So it's not just like family friends. They have like this actual
connection.
Yeah. And I truly don't understand their relationship at all.
Louise and John Paul?
Oh, yeah.
No, it makes zero sense.
I get what they're trying to say, that she stays with him because she sees this future of financial security. But he keeps her like a secret. And I see now that that's his MO, but I don't understand why or how they stay together for 4 years. And somehow John Paul convinces Louise that they're engaged.
I know. It's just kind of like one of those situations where he's obviously 100% manipulative, a gaslighter, and just wants to be in control of her.
Mm-hmm. And I get why she fell for it, because you can tell that she is also very inexperienced and kind of sheltered. And also the time that we're in, women were supposed to be worried about who they were getting married to. That was supposed to be top of their list, you know? Yeah. So I get it, but it's just 4 years, this man didn't buy you a ring. This man has introduced you to his family one time and basically said, like, hey, this is my friend who works at the camp.
Exactly.
Just, okay. So, unsurprisingly, John Paul is an alcoholic and an abusive piece of shit.
Shocker.
A few years prior, he attempted to rape her, then beat her at a party at his house. And she went into hiding in one of the camp bunks, just in the middle of the off season, where TJ found her and nursed her back to health.
Yeah, basically.
This is a tangled web.
It is. I know. It really actually is.
So, anywho, back to current Louise. So, technically, Annabelle was supposed to be in charge the night Barbara went missing, but she snuck off and got drunk. And when both girls are brought in for questioning, Annabelle name drops Louise and says that she asked Annabelle to get rid of evidence and drugs. Then John Paul is picked up, driving drunk, and his car is searched, and he also has evidence, drugs, and bloody clothing, which he says Louise gave to him to get rid of. So obviously Louise is getting screwed by these rich assholes.
Oh, of course, 100%.
But there's nothing she can do because she has no alibi, and it's her word against these people with money. But the fact that she really did ask Annabelle to get rid of this throw up, but then then she plants drugs in it, and then there's another bag with evidence. It's like, I would think you're guilty too, Louise.
I know. It's not looking great.
Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, Tracy is distraught about Barbara being missing, and she thinks she can just go sneak off, find Barbara, and bring her back so that no one gets in trouble and life goes back to normal. But no, Tracy gets stranded in the woods and is rescued by a woman that is the subject of some local ghost stories, Scary Mary. We're like halfway through the characters of this book.
There's still more to come.
Okay. So Inspector Judy is working Barbara's disappearance, and we get a lot of her chapters where she's really second-guessing herself and being treated poorly because she's a woman and she's young in her profession. But she has a knack for investigating, and without her, we'd be nowhere. So enter Jacob Sluder, or Slitter, as he's called in the Tall Tale Ghost Stories.
Terrifying.
Slitter. And also, he's not a ghost. He's a murderer. But he was convicted of sexually assaulting and killing a bunch of young girls. And some say he was a suspect in Bear's disappearance, but not by the cops because they thought it was Carl. So whatever. But anyway, he's escaped from jail for like the ninth time, Ted Bundy style.
Yeah, this guy is the Ted Bundy of this book.
And he's living off the land until he's found and apprehended. So because of the timing, they question him to see if he had anything to do with Barbara's disappearance. And he only wants to talk to Judy, young, inexperienced, nervous Judy. And he says, well, I didn't hurt Barbara and I didn't kill Bear, but I do know where he is and I'll show you. And for the most part, all the other investigators think that he's just screwing with her because he's never confessed to any of his crimes. And the fact that he asked for her by name and, you know, they're just like, oh, this could be a waste of time, but we can't not look into it.
Exactly. If it's a lead, they have to take it.
Exactly. And the fact that it could have something to do with the current case too. So he leads them to the other side of the big lake by the estate and camp. And there's a marked grave, which they dig up and find a child's bones. So Sluder's story is that he was hiding in one of the caves near the grave and he saw a man come and bury Bear's body. Okay. Everyone's like, okay, so you saw him, you didn't say anything, and you didn't do it. Got it. So turns out that man that buried Bear, that's tongue twister, buried Bear's body was Vic Hewitt, who was the old leader of the camp.
Who's now like going through like dementia.
Yeah. And has to be like padlocked in his room.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to do that. But anyway, So he didn't kill Bear. He just got rid of the body. And the person who killed Bear was, massive spoiler, Alice.
Didn't see that one coming.
Did not see that one coming. So she is drunk and high on prescription pills, and she wants to take Bear in the rowboat. But a huge storm hits and floods their boat, which then flips. And I'm pretty sure Bear is hit by the boat.
Yeah, it sounds like he, like, the way that he fell, he got hit and then trapped.
Mm-hmm. Because she heard a loud, like, thunking, which I think was the boat hitting him. And then she obviously can't save him because she's drunk and high and it's storming.
Yeah.
So she somehow finds her way back to shore, hysterically screaming, and she's found by her husband and her father-in-law. So Alice accidentally killed her son, but she's what they would call fragile in those days. So they can't let her know that she killed her son.
Yeah. This was wild.
So they lock her in an apartment above an old slaughterhouse. That's a tangent we're not even going to go down. And they just keep her heavily medicated so that she's always unconscious. And then when she wakes up and she's like, oh, the boat, they're like, no, that was a dream.
Yeah.
And then they send her to a mental hospital.
They're just gaslighting her. And causing her to have like these psychotic breaks.
And she doesn't know what's real and what's not because she is so heavily medicated and she doesn't feel like she can trust her own mind. She doesn't know why all of these people would lie to her. So they decide they have to cover it all up, make sure she never finds out. They bury him and mark his grave, which seems crazy because no one ever finds him, but okay. And all of the big, smart, powerful men in charge come up with this plan to pretend like it never happened. And Vic goes along with it because not only does he go along with it, he buries the body.
I didn't like that.
I hated it. It's one thing to keep the secret. It's another thing to bury the body. Like, obviously, they looked at him as a fucking servant. So they would have him do their dirty work. And I'm sure that they were like, he has to incriminate himself and, you know, get his hands dirty so that he can never turn us in, etc. So Vic goes along with it because he knows that his poor androgynous daughter will never have a real life outside of the camp, and he doesn't want the Van Lars to take away her inheritance. So let's break this down for a minute. I get his reasoning with himself here, that he doesn't have anything to his name or his legacy besides this camp.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to make sure that TJ is set up for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's like, oh no, my daughter dresses like a boy and she'll never have a normal life because everyone will think she's gay. So I need to lie about the death of a child to keep her summer camp safe.
Yeah, it's like he has like this skewed way of justifying how he's protecting TJ. Which isn't right, nor, you know, justice is not served either way. So I don't know.
And he's like, oh, I'm being noble by helping my gay daughter who's not even gay. I don't know. We'll get to that. So I don't know. It just felt very icky. I hated it. So of course, it turns out that 12-year-old TJ overhears all this planning. So she knows the sacrifice her dad made for her.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think of Alice being the killer?
That was like the farthest thing from my mind, because the way that the author writes her as like this chaotic, mentally ill woman who seems so like distraught over the loss of her son, like it just didn't, I never would have thought that she was like the reason. But then obviously now when like I look back and I understand her character arc and her description, and like it makes sense now. Like why she is hopped up on like drugs all the time and became an alcoholic. And like her story, I don't know. Her story was like probably the most heartbreaking one to read in the book, because she gets stuck in this scenario where she's married to a man that she didn't choose. The man doesn't even like her. They don't have like a real relationship. They don't have conversations. They don't sleep in the same bed. Like there's no actual relationship. And then so when she finally gets Bear, she kind of has like a connection to something finally. And to know that she's the reason that he died is just like so heartbreaking. Because that was like,
not to mention,
that's like her one true love. Like that was like her soulmate. And then no one's even telling her what she did. So she's just living with this loss of her son every single day with no answers and just hoping that he's going to come back. You know, she can hear him. They have conversations. It's just like, and then she ends up being forced to have another child that she has no interest in and has no connection with.
Yeah, I think it was Vic was saying that they took away her guilt and replaced it with uncertainty by not letting her know what happened. And not to mention, Alice finds out that her husband was banging her sister.
That also did not see that. That pissed me off. Oh my God. That made me so mad. And I'm just like, oh my God. Because then she was like in an open marriage with her deceased husband. And so she was fucking around with Peter Van Laar, and then I guess saw the connections that could help for her sister. So she pawned her sister off to this douchebag. And then on top of that is deceiving her sister and fucking around with this dude.
Mm-hmm. And Alice finds out and decides that she's okay living with that because she doesn't want to be cast out of society as this divorced woman. She wants to just enjoy her son. And
it's like the entire scenario is fucked for her either way. Like she has – like nothing good comes out of anything for her.
I agree that it did end up making sense in the end that it was Alice, but I hated it because it solidified this whole character arc of her being unstable and untrustworthy and some crazy woman. And not for nothing, Peter never would have trusted her around another child after that.
No, and it's like, and she is this way because they made her that way.
Mm-hmm. But then she never gets any type of redemption. She never, she just becomes worse and worse. And I agree, they made her that way. And she even says, you know, acknowledges that she never had the opportunity to learn. She never had the opportunity to even go out in society and have a social life or any of that. But it's like, it just sucked that she didn't get any redemption or any, you know, I wish it would have been like Peter instead.
Yeah, I agree.
Because once we started thinking, oh, it's the family, I was like, okay, well, I could definitely see it being Peter because, you know, accidentally.
Not like, not like the mother of the child who's obsessed with him, which is why, I mean, that's why it's misleading. Like you don't expect it because she writes this mom who's obsessed with this, her son.
Mm-hmm.
And is distraught.
She finally has something to live for.
Exactly. So you wouldn't expect that to be like the downfall. But it also, again, it like makes sense because nothing goes right in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Like she has the shittiest life.
Mm-hmm.
So
next we have to find out what happened to Barbara because it is not the same as what happened to Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara was planning her own disappearance.
Good for her.
With the help of TJ.
Mm-hmm.
So Judy gets tipped off that Barbara was going to TJ in the middle of the night every night instead of a secret boyfriend. But and was of course, she? Did like, she not also have a secret boyfriend?
She didn't. No, because TJ was the one that was in her room at school.
Yes, yes. Okay.
And then so her and TJ concocted this plan that they were going to help her escape to the family cabin that the Hewitts have. So every night she was going to TJ's cabin to like learn survival skills.
So I was confused. Well, I know that she put his initials, John Paul's initials, in the mural. Well,
that's what threw me too. And I feel like that was, doesn't make sense. Is that pre-planning? That or potentially.
Like, because then the other thing
I think
that
she had a relationship with him.
That's why I'm so confused.
Because he was fucking Annabelle.
Yes, but the other thing – well, I mean, he was probably fucking everybody. But the other thing that confused me is that night when she was injured and she couldn't sneak off to go see her boyfriend and Tracy was basically like, oh, is it okay that you can't go? And Barbara's like, no, I don't think it is okay that I can't go. Like giving off the vibe that
– I understand that too, that like, you know, she, like she's going to pay for it.
Yeah, and it's like, oh –
but I guess
know
maybe
that John
Paul
is really capable of giving women trouble, but
I guess like for her, it's like she's losing out on that time that she would need. That like that's kind of like precious time for her,
yeah,
to also spend with like TJ, you know, because obviously she has this TJ is like a big sister to her, which like it was like crazy, like the implication that like TJ was like having a sexual relationship with Barbara,
yeah,
and I was like, this girl's like 13 years old. I was like, could you please not?
Yeah, so when they get this lead that Barbara was going to TJ in the middle of the night, it's implied that something nefarious is going on, which is disgusting and disappointing.
And TJ immediately is like, I know exactly what you think. And it's like, and it's like, not that.
And she's like, Barbara's like my sister. And Barbara's like, TJ's like my mom.
And she's, TJ has, you know, TJ and Louise had this moment when she was, like you said, like, bringing her back to like life, and TJ doesn't like John Paul because he's abusive and he beat the shit out of Louise, so they're like, let's just frame him for Barbara's disappearance as like a, you know, kind of like a red herring to throw the police off the trail of what exactly was happening. And they got lucky that there was that situation where Barbara stabbed herself with a knife,
and there's blood
so they
everywhere.
Had like bloody proof, you know, they had like a whole they were able to create this whole possible scenario of what happened to her.
Mm-hmm. And I also kind of got the vibe that TJ could have been like asexual.
I think so too, because when Louise was trying to make the move on her, it seemed like maybe, like, I don't know, like,
TJ shut it down real quick.
Real quick. And it was kind of weird. And then she kind of acted like nothing happened because she calls Louise in the summer to come work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think that she's just kind of
a loner. She just wants to be alone.
She's a wild woman, like, mm-hmm. like a woman that belongs in the wild. And I don't think, like I feel her interests and relationships are with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she really wants human connection aside from Barbara.
Well, she also has a lot of on her plate because she's helping Barbara escape. She's taking care of her dad with Alzheimer's. She's covering up a murder from 14 years ago.
She's running a camp.
She's running a camp. I mean, she has a lot going on.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So I get it.
And I really liked the ending where, like, Judita's like, I know that, like, she's still alive. And she's like, I just
want. I'm going to get to that right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we said, basically Barbara hated her family. So TJ taught her how to live off the land, how to survive. And she ran off to TJ's family cabin up in the Adirondacks somewhere. And Inspector Judy figures all this out, goes to the cabin, sees Barbara, asks if she should leave. Barbara says yes, and that's exactly what she does. So even though she knows that this would make her whole career, that it would give the family and the community answers, she respects Barbara's desire for privacy and lets her be.
Mm-hmm.
So go on. What did you think of this?
It just shows like the strength of women being there for each other. Because then you have like TJ trying to protect Louise, and then you have TJ trying to protect Barbara because she understands Barbara's family life and how like tragic it is, and Barbara's so different from what her family would want, so her trajectory for life is shit.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara seems like a loner herself. It doesn't seem like she had many friends either, so she's just kind of like, it's crazy that like this young girl would rather live in the wild for the next 7 years until like she turns 18 or whatever, mm-hmm. a couple of years until she turns 18 and can be like, you know, her own person and be like emancipated. And Judita's mm-hmm. like, you're good? You sure you're good? Then all right, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
well,
she's
I wish that Barbara was older in this whole situation.
This is such like a life changing decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's literally giving up human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure TJ's gonna go out there, but mm-hmm. not very often.
But only as much as she can, because she works at the freaking summer camp.
You know what
I mean? And also, this isn't something that you can easily come back from. Like TJ says, okay, you either chill there until you're 18, or at any time if you change your mind, you just come out of hiding. But like it would not be that easy.
Yeah, I know.
So I had mixed feelings about it, but I did like that they respected that the family didn't really deserve answers, for mm-hmm. one thing, and that Barbara and TJ went through all this planning. Just let them have it, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I had questions about the whole older boyfriend thing, which we already talked about. And then John Pollock never has to answer for any of this shit. And also, why does Annabelle never have to answer to anyone for dating John Paul and blaming everything on Louise?
Because they come from family of affluence.
I hate them.
We know what happens when you have, you know, money can make things go away when you have it.
And Annabelle was also 17 and John Paul was like,
oh, I know,
25 or something.
Disgusting.
Yeah. So we have so many different big themes in here. So the survival aspect is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Gender differences.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much call it about that, especially, I mean, this is in the 70s, but also because of the police force and the whole idea that a woman's worth is linked to her marital status and to her ability to kind of shut up and just let the husband do all the talking and let him make all the plans and just be pretty arm candy.
Exactly.
Or to disappear if you're causing too much of a ruckus, aka Alice.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the class differences. I mean, we find out that Vic was actually extremely close with the first Peter.
Yeah, that was an interesting concept to the story, which again, like, I think, like, I appreciate it as well, because it makes sense to why, like, he would even stick around with his fucking family, because they're clearly terrible human beings.
So basically, hold on, I'm trying to think of how to... So Alice's father-in-law, or Bear's grandfather, which is the main Peter's father, whatever. There's so many Peters. But anyway, the point is that the first Peter brought Vic and his brother into the family, basically raised them as his own sons. And then and he wanted them to basically be brothers.
Yeah. Like, I feel like his hope was that Peter number two and the Hewitts could could come together as their own, like, little created family.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter number two was like, fuck.
Right.
That.
So then when he passed and he left a bunch of stuff to Vic and his brother, but of course...
Greedy.
Yeah. So they weren't, you know, in charge of the estate.
No, because it clearly was like Peter Van Laar II was probably the executor of the will. And he can do what he wants, technically. And the Hewitts aren't really going to... They're not going to be able to truly fight it.
No, they don't have a leg to stand on.
Exactly. And so they wouldn't get whatever they're owed until, like, Peter Van Laar II dies. Which at that point... His brother's already dead. Vic Hewitt's brother has already died. So now it's just Vic, you know, because it was kind of like the camp was supposed to be Hewitt's. Like, that was going to be their – Peter Van Laar I wanted to leave that specific entity to the Hewitts because
But he wanted it to be this big, big operation where they were all getting along together. And instead it turned into this complete separation. And that's all the Hewitts had was the camp. Which is fine because they loved it, but they also knew that their entire future hung in the balance. And if they pissed off any of the Van Laars, they could get written out of that real quick.
They're kind of just like under the Van Laar's thumb, which brings you back to like that situation with Bear. And when Alice killed Bear and they need to like get rid of slash hide the body. And so it falls onto to Vic Hewitt's shoulders and he kind of he doesn't have to go along with it because he could give up what he has, but he doesn't want to do that. So, alas.
Which is honestly, even if you can justify why he did it, the fact that he then showed TJ, these people completely control our lives. It's okay to lie for this, that, and the other reason. Like, it was just not the example that he wanted to be setting for TJ. No,
of course not.
Obviously, loneliness. And we get this from a bunch of different aspects. So there's Tracy who struggles with it. Barbara. Alice is completely isolated. Louise has this strong sense of loneliness. Everyone who's supposed to love her in her life, her boyfriend, her mom, like, they don't care about her. They don't take care of her. And we see all of these women, Inspector Judy, like, how they deal with that loneliness in their own ways. For some of them, it's empowering. Like you said, for Barbara, for TJ. And then for others, it's, I mean, that's the reason. Yeah, that's the reason that Alice couldn't even function.
She becomes like a shell of a human, realistically. And she's just, you know, all she does is take her pills to forget or to not feel anything.
And I just feel like Peter does not have his shit together like he thinks he does, because his wife is out here waltzing through the party, drunk, high as fuck. And he's like, oh, we don't want the bank to have a bad reputation or for people to not trust us with their money.
Like, you should have just offed her away. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's gross. It's
like, she's the liability, not your perfect little son. All right. So who was your favorite character and why?
It was Judita. For sure. She was just such a strong, she's that strong woman character that, like, you want in a book. The one thing I didn't love, which, I don't know, I guess it's just me, but, like, the whole virgin trope. I was like, why does she have to be, like, a virgin? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess to make Jacob Sluder more creepy, which, like, okay, you know. I mean, okay, no, maybe it does make sense, because then it makes him this creepy-ass serial killer who's like, I could smell that on you, like, knew that you were, like, a fucking virgin. But then it's, like, embarrassing for this woman to have to announce this in mm-hmm. front of, well, they're behind, like, the camera or whatever, but, like, the other, all the men on the police force. Mm-hmm. So now she needs to admit to this personal, very personal aspect of her life that they don't deserve to know or have any right to know. And, like, but Jacob Sluder kind of, like, has to, is showing her hand.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, does it. Like, she admits it. She's like, I could have lied and said no. Like, I'm, you know, but he's like, I was honest. And I think that that's what gained her trust with Sluder and why he was so willing to give up this information to her, because he clearly found some kind of endearing quality to her. Creepy or not, like,
mm-hmm.
she did the right thing. And so it's just, you know, and she's trying to find herself in this world that's ruled by men, you know, because she deals with it on the police force. They don't take her seriously. I did like how, like, the, oh god, is he like the sheriff? I can't remember the dude's name.
Her the partner guy, that guy?
She, like, works up to, what was it?
Her partner?
Yeah. I feel like he was the only man that didn't treat her differently. Like, he could see, like, her strength and, like, what she was capable of. Because then you have this scenario where she's staying at a motel and that her dad just, like, fucking shows up. And, like, she's, like, a woman in her 20s and he's, like, get in the car, you're going home. And she's, like, no. Like, you know, like, she's just constantly, I feel, underestimated by men in mm-hmm. her life.
And they don't agree with her moving out until she's married. I also think with Denny, her partner, who's her superior, obviously, but he's like training her. I liked that at the beginning, he didn't really take her seriously. No. And he kind of, it wasn't because of her gender as much as the rest of the force, but it was because she was so young
mm-hmm.
and she was so new, and he was just kind of like, okay, don't get into any trouble, ha ha ha.
I know.
And then he starts to see how smart she is mm-hmm. and how she's picking capable up on all this and stuff,
and then she's basically the one that solves everything, and mm-hmm. you know,
and
God
it just
forbid
proves
a woman does a job better than a man.
Exactly. And it just proves, like, how dedicated she was to her job, that she did play that card in front of Sluder and admit to that in front of everyone mm-hmm. who she knew was going to make them look at her differently. But she also knew in that moment, that's the card she had to play.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really liked her also. I thought I liked, because normally when we see a character like this, it's a woman who is this strong woman and is trying to get everyone to take them seriously. Mm-hmm. Whereas with her, there was that little bit of insecurity mm-hmm. and that self-doubt a little bit. And she kind of had to separate, oh, is this my own self-doubt or is this mm-hmm. what society is doubting in me?
Exactly. And so I really liked her character arc. Mm-hmm. And I think that she was definitely, like, the strongest character in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And but I also like Louise. I feel like,
I don't know how I feel about Louise.
I feel like she was, I feel like she kind of just had the shit end of the stick in life. And I mean, she's stupid for sticking around with John Paul. Like, she's not very smart in that sense. But, you know, I feel like post Barbara's going missing, it feels like Louise wants to, like, change her life around. And now she sees what a fool she's been.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, seeing that, like, her little brother is, like, doing drugs, you know, and, like, so she, I think, sees that things have to, like, change.
And her little brother is, like, stop dating assholes.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like this whole story, her arc moving forward would be a kind of like a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and she also has to come to terms with the fact that she's not hiding everything, like, from her brother that she thinks she is, and mm-hmm. that he's smarter than she gives him credit for.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I think that people underestimate little kids
mm-hmm.
because they're little and they think that they don't know. But, like, little kids read shit mm-hmm. very easily, and especially ones that are in these abusive family scenarios. Mm-hmm. Like, he has to take care of himself. His sister's gone for good reason. She's trying to earn money so that she can take her brother with her. And then she has an addict mother who doesn't take care of him. Like, mm-hmm. at one point when Louise calls to talk to him, like, there's no food in the house. Mm-hmm. And she's like, go to the store and like put it on my account. Like, you need to eat, you know? So it's like, it's crazy.
It's sad. It's horrible. I also really like Tracy, though.
I did, too. Again, there's just, like, little things in stories that, like, I just feel are just so overplayed. The whole, like, the boy that she liked Barbara, and then Barbara, like, kissed him. And I just kind of, like, I don't know. I don't think that was necessary to the story. Which Tracy was so quick to forgive as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just – and I felt bad because Tracy kind of – same thing. She finally has a friendship with someone that she really likes, and Barbara's hyping her up to go for this boy and, you know, sing with him. And then, like, Tracy kind of sees on her own without even Barbara interfering. Like, she could tell that, like, the dude's not into him. But I thought it was an interesting twist that his best friend loved him too. And so it was like this really cute, like, scenario where, like, this, you know, you have these kind of, like you said, like, inexperienced young kids who are crushing on this popular boy who's like the golden boy, who mm-hmm. of course likes the golden girl / popular girl. And they're just, and then now you're in a situation where, like, his best friend's in love with him, but also, like, there's a girl that, a really quiet girl that, like, loves him too, but he just only wants Barbara because he wants what he can't have. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it was an interesting thing.
And this is also another thing that I was thinking about, all of this stifled queerness,
yes,
in this book, because, like you said, we have Walter.
Yes.
What was the other boy's name? The
one I know. Liked? I, like, can't remember his name. It was something weird. Lowell.
It was like Lee Lowell. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's also, you get these kind of vibes between Barbara and Tracy, and you can't tell if it's just close friendship, yes, or more than that.
I can agree with that too.
And then Louise is kind of exploring her sexuality a little bit. And all of this is just stifled because, I mean, this book has all of the shitty things in society. It has homophobia and classism and gender bias. Like, it is, it's a lot.
Yeah.
All in one story. But I mean, this is the
ambitious 70s. We come back around to the word ambitious, because that's what ambitious. This was. She kind of stuck a lot into this book, but it worked. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think it was going to work, but it worked.
Yeah, I, after like the fourth chapter, when we were in our fourth POV, I was like, oh no, I'm not gonna be able to, especially because it's a 500 page book.
Well, that was the thing too. Like, and it had such a slow start because there was so much character building and story building. And then you're just wondering how it's all going to tie together. So I didn't know. But the way that it did end up tying together was shockingly flawless, in my opinion. And so that's, like, what blew me away. Because I was mm-hmm. like, okay, I understand why people like it so much, but I don't think it's as good as people make it out to be.
Yeah.
But again, I feel like here we are. I feel like these books that everyone freaking raves about, I don't like as much.
Yeah. Well, it was – I thought it was super impressive the way that this all came together. I got Last Time I Lied vibes to the max.
Yes, I did too.
Because not just because of the summer camp, but because mm-hmm. the dual POVs, the two disappearances.
I felt the same way. I kept reflecting back on that book mm-hmm. as well.
And that one got super crazy, but it all tied back. So I mm-hmm. definitely got the same vibes. The problem with this one is that I felt like there were definitely unanswered questions at the end. And there were also so many irrelevant characters.
Yeah.
Like, what was Scary Mary's purpose? I know what her purpose was, because she was Carl's wife who had been trying to get him exonerated all these years.
I think it
but
was
she's just wandering yeah. through the woods in a nightgown.
I think it's just kind of some secondary character that the author needed to add in order to kind of tie it all together.
But did they need to add it? That's the question.
No, because I feel like the whole I don't even think that the whole thing of Tracy going off to look for Barbara was even needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of sucked because they introduce Tracy to us and we grow attached to her and we love her. But then after she's found and she's sent home, we just don't care about her anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, that kind of sucked. And I just felt like there was a lot of stuff. Even the cook who was
Lee?
The daughter.
Well, that. Yeah. So the Stoddard's daughter who was the cook for the Van Lars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I felt like, yes, she gave that tip, but that could have come from somewhere else. And Lee also. Like, he had this whole thing, and they're like, oh, by the way, statutory rape. Oh, but it wasn't really. And now he's gone. I'm like,
I agree with that. There was a lot of, like, side things, but I feel like the main event of the book, how we get to, like, the conclusion, that was good.
Yeah. I just wish I had a ledger at the beginning of, like, hey, there's 65 characters. You only have to pay attention to these 50.
Like, they put a map of the property. I'm like, I don't need a map. I need a list of characters.
100%. I need a little cheat sheet.
Could give a fuck about the map.
All right. So what do you think of the significance of the title? I saw a lot of people talking about this online, The God of the Woods.
I actually don't even know because I don't, like, I understand, like, they say it's brought up in the book. There's, like, the talk of the god, whatever, there's the, it comes up that there was a specific Greek god that was the god of the woods. Pan, is that what it was?
I don't remember, but yes, I believe
and
you.
Then that was, so that's kind of, like, briefly touched on, but I don't get the significance of it.
Yeah, and then they say when Judy's swimming away from Barbara and she's like, she looks like this ethereal figure who's just, like, one with nature. I kind of got the vibe that that's what she was saying. I don't know. I think it's just a catchy title. I think people are, like, reading too much into it.
Because I don't think it even ties in at all with any of it. Like, I don't know.
Like, last time I lied. What does that have to do with anything? It doesn't. Yeah, everyone lies in every book. I get it.
Yeah.
But I did see a lot of people talking about the cover and the pink drip.
Yeah.
So in literal terms, this is obviously how they covered the mural in Barbara's room.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
But then in figurative terms, it's the cover up of Bear's murder in the woods.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, that I get.
That I get.
All right, I think that's all I had. Anything else that we need to discuss before we get to these ratings?
No, I think I touched on all the points that I liked about the book.
For anyone who is just listening to this and didn't read the book, I swear there were, like, 94 more storylines that we didn't even talk about.
No, I know. There was a lot. There was truly a lot. Too much, really.
But they,
like,
did
the fact
of, like,
together. Denny, like, fucked Louise's mom. Like,
and then Louise, which, good for Louise, this actually made me like her a lot more. When Lee came to, like, say goodbye because he's on the run, she's like, you want to mess around?
Yeah, she's like,
and then they just, like, bang on the front lawn.
I know. She's like, let me just get, like, my relief. And yeah. Go do
so. I was like, you know what? Good for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our rating scale is days you'd survive in the wilderness.
Oh God, I would be a -0. I wouldn't even make it five minutes.
Like, is there a Starbucks out here?
I gave it 4.5 stars.
Okay.
Yeah, because I actually, as confusing as they were, I liked the timelines. I'm a big timeline girly,
mm-hmm.
/ multiple POVs. Like, I'm super into it. And I think that it was so smart how she titled the chapters and the timing. And I appreciated how the timelines all came together in the end. Like, I truly think that it was, like, a flawless, like, tie-in. Like, she did so good with that. But, like, I didn't like how slow it was to start. And I don't know that I necessarily get the hype of it and why this is, like, such, like, a best-selling or, like, the number one thriller of the year. I don't know. I don't think I necessarily get that as much. But I liked her writing style. And I would definitely read more of hers. But I can at least go into it now knowing that I'm probably going to get a lot of story / character arc building before mm-hmm. we get to the meat of the story. Because once we got to the meat of the story, I was really, really into it. But mm-hmm. it took me a while to get to that point, which is why I can't give it, like, a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
I think the story itself was very good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I am giving this 4 Days That I'd Survive in the Wilderness. I agree. The beginning was just slow, and also it kind of took me out of it that I was like stressing out about trying to remember everybody and remembering different timelines.
I felt like I couldn't connect to it, which was also like why I figured I had to do the audio as well, because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to focus on the book, mm-hmm. which is why I think the audio helped tremendously as well, because it mm-hmm. I was able to kind of really get in a better feel for the story. Mm-hmm. I actually feel like this is a good book to listen to compared to reading because of how dull it can be, but it actually like does have like a lot of substance, but mm-hmm. you just have to like kind of get to it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, like you said, I loved how it all tied together in the end. I did not see how she was going to pull that off. Mm-hmm. I'm so impressed, because there had to have been just tangled webs in there that she completely forgot about. Like, I would love to see her notes. And she said, she was talking about on that podcast a little bit about how, like, which character she started with. And it actually mm-hmm. started with Louise, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So, but how she kind of went from, like, character to character. And originally, she wasn't even going to have Investigator Judy in there.
Which I'm so glad she did, because yeah. she said, of the entire book.
She's like, she ended up being one of my favorites, but she needed to have some type of investigator or police to really like break down the case and stuff.
Exactly.
But anyway, so I was just really impressed that she was able to keep this all organized, able to pull it off. There definitely were some unanswered questions and like loose ends, but none that ruined it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Ones where I was just kind of like, and like, whatever, you know?
Exactly.
And I really liked her writing style. I kind of want to read that other one. I think it's called like Long Bright River or something.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I do too. Mm-hmm.
That's her other big one. I don't know if I get the hype, just because this didn't feel like a completely original or novel idea at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was just so many tropes like, put together.
I know. And like, I feel like I understand that it's like a kind of like a thriller or like a mystery novel, but I don't know. I would have preferred it to stand stronger on its own two legs to be mm-hmm. like best book of the year.
Yeah.
It was good. Like I mm-hmm. said, I enjoying it, but I think that there may have been, maybe there wasn't better books. I don't know.
Who knows?
I'm doing what I can.
Listen, we read it. Okay. What more do you want from us?
Right.
And we enjoyed it.
No, I did. I liked it. Listen, I'm not dismissing it
mm-hmm.
completely.
I just had to try a little too hard.
That's to what be I did. I know. And that's what I didn't love.
Mm-hmm. Although I will add quickly that I saw someone else online talking about how they really appreciated how she wrote the teenage characters.
Mm hmm.
Like Tracy yeah. and Barbara, it felt authentically like they were teenagers.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. That's why I really liked the Tracy, you know, story arc and the whole like Walter thing. You have this young boy who's like in love with his best friend and he has to hide it.
He's like, isn't he amazing?
Yeah, like this is like real things that happen to teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I actually, and it wasn't like too gross.
Yeah, because, you know, we don't like that.
Mm-mm.
All right, so I feel like we always sound like we don't like it.
I know.
But we did like it.
But we did like it.
The proof is in the ratings.
The proof is in the pudding.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right, that's all we have for you today. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you're using. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at FullyBookedCalfPod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye. Bye.